Welcome to Mortgage Space. I'm your host, Alan Medeiros, and today we have the distinct pleasure of spending some time with Alex Mora, real estate advisor and investor. One of the things that I was asking when I started this podcast is, who can I find in the industry that are not only good people, but also people that are passionate about what they do? And I was thinking, man, I got to talk to Alex. I've known Alex here for almost 10 years, and it's funny because I knew him prior to him being more on the advising side, but more so as an investor. So I want to give some quick stats. Are you okay with that, Alex?
Sure, go ahead.
All right, so from 2009 to 2015, Alex, in his investment efforts as a broker and as an associate there, closed over 2,000 properties with over $525 million in flips and production. That doesn't tell you that he's been active. I don't know what else will. So, Alex, thank you so much for your time today. Really, it's going to be a very laid-back conversation. We're just going to talk. I'm going to let you kind of go with what the flow is, but I'm going to ask you some questions as leading questions, and I just hope that, you know, the listeners of this podcast get something out of it. So, right, Alex, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me more about kind of your background and how you got into real estate.
Got it. Well, thanks. Excuse me, Alan. Thanks for having me here. Thanks for the invite. I was a little nervous. I've never had to do anything like this, but how I started into real estate, I've been licensed now for 11 years. So I was licensed in 2007. So I actually got into the market right before it crashed. Or at least I probably got a good, you know, maybe 2-3 months out of it before I started seeing it turning. So I got into it when majority of the agents at that point were at the top, probably their business, and they were leaving. I remember a lot of agents were leaving, a lot of real estate companies were shutting down, and I figured, to me at that point, was, hey, why shouldn't I just start getting into real estate, right? sounds kind of crazy if you put it that way, but I did graduate in 06 from Cal State Bakersfield, so at that point, I was still looking to see what I wanted to do, really. I have a background in finance. I graduated with a bachelor's in finance. So I've always investments have always intrigued me.
Sure.
So I was always looking for that. Where am I going to do investments? I had an internship at Smith Barney for about 6 months, 8 months maybe or so. And then I always worked at the bank. So I had different options, but I chose real estate because it was hot at that point, and I'd say, hey, why not? Why not me?
So let's talk about what you mean by hot. Explain that, because 2007, getting licensed, everything, with Lehman Brothers going down in 2008, there was a big exodus in the industry for a while there. For about 2008 to 2010, I think we saw the biggest exit of real estate and lenders during that time. But did you think at that time that it was going to spell out the opportunity that you saw?
Well, you know, I honestly didn't have a lot of knowledge about the market at that point. You know, I was going through college again for the majority of upswing in real estate. So,
sure.
You know, I was going to school, and I didn't really pay attention to what the markets were doing. So, quick answer. No, I did not know up until probably when it actually crashed. That's when I realized, there's got to be a different way to do business. You know, real estate, there's always a way to do business in real estate in the up or down market. So I told myself I was going to figure it out. So anyways, that's where the market changed, and you know, the distressed market came in, and then as soon as I knew that it was a distressed market, then I found opportunities, and I just figured it out. I started seeing a lot. Like I said, there was a lot of companies going out of business. Everyone was talking about short sales. I didn't know what a short sale was at that point. A lot of the seasoned agents at that point jumped into it right away. They know exactly what was happening, where the market was at. You started seeing short sell trainings everywhere you turned.
Sure.
Right, in the real estate business. And so that was the next thing. So I jumped into training right away, and I learned how to do short sales. Okay, that was the next thing. That or bank-owned properties, REOs, right? Sure. So there was a lot of hard work to be done, and I noticed that a lot of the agents at that point in the market did not want to do that work. And so I just seen it as an opportunity for me to learn the business, to learn the short sale business.
A little bit. Okay, so now you learned about the short sales. Right. You saw that bank-owned properties were coming into the market in larger numbers than maybe anyone has ever witnessed. Literally, that particular time frame, just because I study the market, is one of the biggest consistent loss periods that banks had ever taken in the history of mortgages. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'll go back real quick and kind of give a quick definition to the listeners, because they may have not listened to other podcasts yet. But a short sale is defined by giving the bank less than the original balance that was owed. So the only thing short about this is not the process, because you know they took 3, 6, 9 months to close, right?
Right. They're horrible.
They were really bad. It was the amount that was received. They were shorted the total amount. So for example, if they were owed $100,000, this is a very simple example, and the property was negotiated to be sold for $70,000, mm-hmm. that $30,000 short, minus expenses, minus costs, was really all that the end lender received. Right. So that's a big distinction, because there were investors after investors that were out in the marketplace trying to take advantage of these mm-hmm. properties that were selling on sale, on discount. Am I right?
Right. Yeah. And that's another point that I wanted to cover. Yes. When I was going through these trainings, I was going to Southern California, Northern California. The majority of the attendees there were investors, as a matter of fact. Not a lot of them were. Some of them were agents, but the majority of the attendees there were investors. And I was probably, out of 10 investors, I was probably one agent out there, because they want to learn the business so they can buy and flip property.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know what the heck was going on. So I just threw myself out there. I really, at that point, I was just a one-man show. It was just me. I wanted to learn the business. I seen the trend come in, so I thought it was just a perfect opportunity to learn the business, like I said, and at the same time, and I was going out there just like to learn the process, how a short sale works.
Mm-hmm.
But I got exposed to the investment side of that.
Sure.
And that's where things really got going for me.
Yeah. So initially, how is it that you started to purchase property and then turn them for a profit? How is it that you got into that situation?
Well, it took me a while to actually start purchasing property myself. Threw myself out there, get in the market. Just wanted to meet investors. I wanted, actually, majority of the time, I was dealing with investors out of town.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find anyone in town that knew they could flip short sale properties. At least in my little small network at that point in my business, I was not aware did not know who the players in town were.
Sure.
Who can I go to? I asked other agents in town if they knew what a short sale was or how to flip a short sale. They thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. So I reached out for, other mentors. Most of them, like I said, were out of the area. And I was able to click with one. He was ready to fund me. He was ready to fund my transactions or the short sales at that point. But what he was doing, as a matter of fact, he was doing trustee sales up in Georgia, East Coast, right?
Really?
Yes. And he was a retired guy, had some, retirement money. He wanted to move out of Santa Barbara. He was retired, so he wanted a beach house. So that was his way of transitioning into the West Coast. He wasn't familiar with the West Coast at all, but he knew he wanted to move. So he was trying to connect with investors out in the West Coast to start doing deal with, and eventually he'll get familiar with the area and move out here. And through him, I was able to just get to know a little bit what a trustee sale was.
Yeah.
Okay. So he wanted me to actually buy property for him at the trustee sales here. And eventually, you know, I was just hanging out at the trustee auction, you know, at the court steps. At that point, I didn't know who the other players were. I didn't know who else showed up. I didn't know that it was you know, there was a good old boys club in there.
Sure.
You know, I was just walking in there naive, just, you know, trying to see what the heck was going on here. Who's the auctioneer? Who's everyone around here standing? And so that's how I got into the investment side through that. Eventually, I got to know everyone there. I started showing up to these auctions every day. So I had been learned. I was studying everyone that was there. I wanted to see what they were doing, what they were buying. I got to know how things worked at the auctions. And eventually, I partnered up with one of the investors that was there. Actually, they were looking for other agents. They were looking to grow their team. And so right away, I seen the opportunity and I jumped on it.
Now, in this, it sounds like you got a lot of your education through just being present and being an observer, right?
Yes.
And that probably garnered you some trust because they saw that you weren't backing down. I mean, you were there consistently, you're watching them, you're listening, and that opportunity presented itself to have another, I guess, opportunity to work with an investor that had pools of funds to help you get to that next level. You know, that's really fascinating. We've never talked about this stuff, which is always kind of cool because I'm learning all this. I had no idea that you had a bachelor's degree in finance and that you'd actually spent some time working for Smith Barney. But it took you down a different path because I think you had a drive to grow bigger outside of that controlled environment, I think, of finance that you had seen. Well, let's go ahead and shift gears a little bit. Now, before this podcast started, I heard you're actually taking active calls right now about active investment flips that you're doing. And it's funny because, you know, you never know whether somebody's just talking or they're doing, right? So
right.
You have a different perspective when you hear somebody actively doing their craft. So things I heard was, okay, so what's the cost of that material? Okay, so when is that roof coming off? You know, when can we get the demo started? You have timelines. You have very specific actionable events that you need to have done because you know that time is worth money, right?
Exactly.
So I'm learning a lot just listening here. So it's always exciting for me to do that because I'm a lowly mortgage loan officer. I just finance people. So I give them lots of debt. You're out there creating wealth, which is fantastic. And I think we talked about this before, too. It's a mindset, right? It's about how to develop a legacy for your family and a long-term plan that will create income, right? So for a first-time investor, let's just say these people listen to something late night. What do they hear? They need to go ahead and ask themselves, I want to go ahead and buy property. I want to flip property. I want to become an investor. When you hear somebody come to you like that, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, you know, I want to see where they're at first. You know, I don't judge anyone by their appearance. I want to see where their mind's at, really.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of right now. There's a lot of first time investors. They're going to these trainings. You know, all over California, really everywhere, all across the nation. They're calling my office. They want to look for flips, deals to, you know, they want to invest. And I invite them to my office to come have an interview just to see where they're at. I want to see, you know, if they just came off of training and they're fired up and they're just, you know, trying to find a deal here or there. And so first I want to see if they're looking to buy or they're looking to invest. Because there's a difference, you know.
So give us that distinction.
I want to see really if well, you know, it's kind of hard for me to put it in words. I've never asked that. I don't think anyone has asked me that
so
question.
So I'll just draw a line in the sand so we understand.
Yeah.
So if they want to purchase, what does that mean to you?
So they all want to flip. Period. Okay. They've seen the shows. They want to go. They want to have that experience. And it's not as easy as what the show's
of course
and how they make it sound. I've never been to these trainings, to be honest with you. I never actually been to a flip training, how to flip a property. I started just, you know, by buying property first and just figuring it out. But you know, there's a difference between buying a property and managing the project.
Okay.
So what I mean, what I want to ask them is, you want to buy a property, you want to fix it yourself, and then you want to sell it. Okay. Majority of the time, a lot of these first-time investors don't even own a property. They had never picked up a hammer. Okay. They've never managed any sort of project, construction project. So there is another aspect of the business there that I think they might overlook. And I would, you know, the investors I deal with right now, I want to know that they just have the money and they're going to bet on me to get the job done. Okay, that's the kind of person I like to be. You know, they see the show, they want to flip, they want to experience remodeling bathroom, remodeling kitchen. There's too much emotion involved. More than likely, they're going to end up with a much higher budget. There's too much emotion involved. So I want to see where they're at, where the mindset is at, where the emotion is at. Okay, if they're too emotionally involved, then I'm not probably going to deal with them.
Sure.
You know, I might just flip them, wholesale them a deal, and you know, that's it. But I won't get involved in their project management or nothing like that.
The investing side. So you asked, are they going to purchase, are they going to invest? So it sounds to me like the investment side would be something that you could probably do a lot more and be more effective, meaning they have money, they have seed money, they have something to provide you with the opportunity to find the right deal. Right. And then you do the project management. You do the things that you know are effective based off your life experiences to create value for them.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes. You know, every investor is a different point in their life where, you know, they either want to be in the business and they want to manage the projects and they want to get involved in the daily operations. And then there's the investor where they don't want to do anything with project managing or selling the actual house.
Yeah.
They just want to fund it.
Sure.
So it just depends on where they're at. The difference is really is, you know, some investors have, you know, they don't need to buy another house, but they have so much, you know, capital that they need to deploy. They just don't want to have it sitting there. So at that point, That type of investor is the one that I like to deal with because they just want to fund the project, get their money back, and go on to the next one. Okay, they allow me to do my operations, get my managers to manage the project, and move on to the next deal. That way, there's less headaches for everyone. It just makes
as you're going through and you're locating property, you're going to have a different mindset if you know that you're the purchaser, but you're using capital that's coming from investors, right? Because then it's not all your money. You're making the best financial decision to create a positive outcome, I think, to sell that property, make a profit, and get to the next project, right?
Right.
So let me ask this question because this is kind of related. Let's shift over to the actual project itself or the process of finding the right home to fix and flip, right? So what are some basic characteristics that you're looking for when you're out actively looking for property?
Well, I mean, the basic stuff is, you know, we're looking up for, right now I have a team driving all over town. They're looking for boarded up houses, broken windows,
okay,
you know, tall grass, dried up grass, any sign of distress. We take the information in and put it in our database, and then we just try to get a hold of the owner to sell the property. So that's the most basic stuff. You know, first want to see what's out there. You know, simple as that. You know, and yeah. Anyone can do that.
Yeah,
really, anyone can go out there and drive these properties. But it's how you follow up. It's how the approach. What's your strategy to get to the owner? Once you meet the owner, what's your strategy to close them? There's a strategy behind that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that comes through your experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this situation, let's just say you found a house with tall weeds in the front, boarded up windows. The houses in the area generally are okay. Maybe not perfect condition, mm-hmm. right? What are the next steps after you contact that owner and make contact that you go through? What are some things that you're looking for as far as physical characteristics for the property itself?
Right. So I really don't have anything in particular, to be honest with you, like any characteristics. That's actually a good question you bring up right now, because it's a house. So I don't care if that house is sitting in the ghetto or sitting in Seven Oaks. Okay. I'm not going to turn that house down because it doesn't have, you know, it doesn't look like the picture perfect house or the Disney book story house.
Sure.
I don't care what it looks like. I want to get inside a house and I want to determine if it's a good investment or not.
That's it. That's what I was trying to get at. So once you get in the house, you've done a walk around probably. You know, if maybe you get to the property, mm-hmm. you know, you put your boots on and your jeans and you try to go around this thing because it's got weeds as tall as you are. But you're looking probably at the bones of the house too. If you have to tear this thing down to the studs completely, you may want to pass on that. But if you see that the house itself mm-hmm. has some potential, but you know subconsciously because of the projects that you've done, I budget about this much in my head. Until I get in there and really dig at it, I'm thinking this might be a right number. Am I wrong? Because you're doing things. Here's the thing.
Right.
What we do in our industry, specifically mortgage finance, mm-hmm. many times we process things so quickly because it's second nature, right?
Right, right.
And part of that is that we have calculated things without even verbalizing it. Mm-hmm. So those that don't know have to ask questions and they have to know more just because they just don't know what they don't know. So you as a seasoned investor are going to have a different eye for things than the emotional first-time investor that's saying, well, you know what? I don't like the neighborhood, or I don't like, you know, what this looks like from the front. Do we have to change the whole front in order to make this something that we can sell?
Right,
you know, so they've got different key features in their mind mm-hmm. that you may just overlook because you see mm-hmm. a different side of the transaction. Am I wrong?
No, you hit the nail on the head. Preparation brings opportunity. And so, yes, when, you know, the more of these deals that I do, I'm just, you know, doing repetition. So the more deals I see like that, the more I'm learning. So the next opportunity becomes, you know, I may have bought something today that I turned down 2 years ago because I've already felt that experience. I know what it was like. And next time another deal that, I wasn't familiar with or I haven't experienced, I might just find another opportunity there. So yes, you know, going back to the first time investor, I have tried to deal with first time investors, and I have pitched out property to them, and they turn it down for some simple, they don't like the neighborhood. I'm like, okay, you're not ready for this, you know.
So it's that mindset again,
and the mindset, right? And I respect that because it's new, and they want it's their money.
Yeah,
they want to protect their money, and I completely understand that. But at that point, I ended up buying the house myself.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was going to say is that you, as an agent, may have one viewpoint. It's like, hey, this person solicited my services to be the eyes and the ears for them. Mm-hmm. But if they pass on something, and you see the opportunity, you may just go buy it yourself, right?
Right.
And that's one thing that kind of can work in your favor. But I'm sure that it depends on timing. I think timing is important. Would you agree?
Absolutely. It's sometimes I'll have the capital to buy the property.
Sure.
If not, I'll have the investors I'm working with buy the property. Or I'll just pass it down to, you know, someone that I want to work in a new relationship with.
Sure.
Sometimes it comes down to that. So, but most of the time I try to buy and flip what I can.
That's good. That's cool. So another thing I want to ask you is, when you're looking at these things, we've talked exclusively about flip so far. Do you buy and hold at any property?
I have in the past. I don't hold as much as I do flip. So the long-term plan is to hold, buy and hold. Obviously, you want passive income, you have to hold. You have to buy rentals. You have to build up that passive income. In my years, I've probably held about 5 properties. Right now, majority of my focus is flip. But again, going back to the mindset has a lot to do with it.
Sure.
To be honest with you, because, you know, being in the business, there's egos.
Sure.
Okay. And I've seen it. I've been long enough to see that there's flippers out there, there's wholesalers, and then there's buy and hold. You know, there's this certain investor, all he talks about is buy and hold. What the hell are you doing flipping all these properties, Alex? Why don't you just buy them and hold them? And we'll, you know, for a long time, I would just say, well, if I can come up $30,000-$40,000 on the transaction, well, why shouldn't I flip it now?
Sure.
Make my money, get out. Then you have the other mindset. You have the buy and hold mindset. Then you have the wholesale mindset.
What is wholesaling?
So wholesaling is really the investor that's literally going out there finding sellers, finding these distressed properties. And they're able to wholesale that property to the next investor. And usually they're doing it with no cash, no money. So they just put into a contract, and they're flipping it over to the next investor that's going to flip into the rehab.
Got it.
So there's a difference there. And what the wholesaler mindset is they don't have money. So for them to make a quick $5,000, $10,000, even more on that transaction, they didn't put a penny in. And then yes, you know, their mindset is, well, I have nothing in, no risk. I can pass it on to the next guy, have him handle all the risk, all the project management, all that, and then eventually sell it, you know, 3 to 4 months later. And then you have the flipper mindset where they want to, whatever they buy, they want to flip, you know. And then you have the buy and hold. That investor doesn't need to flip. You know, that investor is probably deep pockets. They don't need a flip. All their focus is on building more of the passive income. So I guess it depends on where you're at again. What is your mindset? What's your strategy? I know investors that buy and hold, and they already have their portfolio set. They have their passive income set, but they're still doing the flipping because they love the business.
Sure.
And they're in it.
Do you get any satisfaction of seeing what it used to look like and what it finishes out?
Right, right.
I mean, I know people, it's like, that's a big deal for them. They love to take the pictures. They like to feel like, hey, I accomplished something. Understand it. And I'll bring this back to kind of the bigger picture for people. A flipper or an investor that does this stuff, yes, they are doing it for monetary gain. But the person that's getting this property will have a rehabbed property that wasn't saleable in its previous condition most of the time, right?
Right, right.
So that's an important feature. We're actually creating housing that was not available traditionally. So that's something that I see on the lending side. Mm-hmm. Now, guidelines have definitely been very dynamic, meaning they changed over and over again about how long you should wait until a house is purchased, what you did to the property, and then if it can be financed. Because a buyer of that property for the flip will likely not be another investor. It's likely going to be a family or an individual trying to buy that house. So we would see it at that point, right? Mm-hmm. And you as an investor would say, okay, we know what we need to make on this. This is what we've calculated as far as cost. This is where our holding costs are. So let's talk about holding costs, because that becomes an important feature for you. Am I wrong?
Yes, absolutely. Holding costs, yes, it is. You know, you have to calculate the interest if you're borrowing money.
Sure.
You also got to calculate the utilities, insurance, garner. I think I already said utilities.
Yeah.
You know, anything else that comes attached to that property, while you own it, yes, there is that aspect that you have to, you can't overlook. You cannot overlook that as well.
Yeah, and the holding costs, if it goes beyond your tolerance, it could run up an issue for you too, right?
It can. Right now, for the most part, you know, I can say that the projects are moving fast enough to where, you know, I'm not spending too much on the holding cost. But some, you know, there are some other projects where, you know, it just depends on how, you know, how deep of a discount you bought the house for.
Sure.
You know, you may tolerate less on one, especially if it's an easy fix and it's a small margin, you can see yourself getting in and out quick, then focus on that one first and get it out, get your money out. And then the other ones, you know, you just kind of have to wait and, you know, put them on the back burner. But there's just different ways. Every house is different. Every flip is different. And you just have to see your overall portfolio to see which one's going to go first and which ones are going to cost you more in the long run.
So with that idea that you're talking about, going back to the initial research, okay, once you found the house that you want to buy, you contact the owner. What other things are you doing to find out how far your investment needs to go with that? Meaning, do you look at tax rolls? Do you look at property profiles? Do you see if there's any outstanding liens against the property? Do you do that kind of research when you're talking to an owner?
I do. As soon as I make contact, well, once we find the property out there, then yes, we do our diligence. We want to see if there's any liens against the house, any back taxes, any permits that have been pulled on the property. Mm. They may have been undone or not completed, I mean. So yes, there is a lot of diligence behind that to be done. Well, for the most part, these transactions that I buy go through escrow, so I get clean title anyways.
Sure, important.
Yeah, so otherwise, if I'm dealing with the owner directly and I'm doing for sale by owner, then yeah, we have to do all the work up front.
Sure.
I've had some owners that don't want to go through escrow. They don't want to pay the fee. And even if I offer to pay the fee, they just want cash. They want it now. I literally walked over to the recorder's office and handed them a cashier's check and just signed you know, the title over to my name.
Wow.
I've had to do that a couple of times because they don't know they don't know what a transaction is, so they just want their money and that's
it. Wow, that's interesting. You know, to me, I'll give this example. We're a lending institution, mm-hmm. you know, as a company. We, you know, $4.5 to $5 billion a year. But I literally had one client that came in with $150,000 cash and walked up to the front counter and said, I have money here. And I said, get it out of here, you know, because we don't deal with real physical cash or cashier's checks or that kind of stuff like that. It all goes through escrow and title. So, Alex, I had this question that came up, and it was really trying to figure out if you're working with an investor and they had financing as a requirement versus paying cash for a property, would you work with somebody like that?
Absolutely. It just depends on what property they're buying, really.
Yeah, that's the first thing that came to my mind, is if the property is not in lendable condition, then mm-hmm. financing really doesn't seem like a feasible option unless they have, say, the desire to use private money, which is quite expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me is... I jokingly say it's mafia money. You know, you're talking double-digit interest, multiple points on the front end. But if they see the return because they can get into the property at the right price, that financing is private money. So technically it could be funded within probably 10 days or less, and you guys can move on with the transaction. But have you ever had situations where somebody would use financing?
Most of the transactions that I do are cash.
Yeah.
It's not too common for them to be financed, to be honest with you. Every now and then there is a property that does qualify for financing, and at that point we'll do it. Otherwise, it's really cash or hard money. And that's another mindset I want to get into as well. You know, the hard money is there to, you know, it's pretty, you know, yes, it is pricey, but at some point you're going to need to leverage that if you want to continue to grow your business. I know I haven't used it much. I use it when I can, when I have to. So, I mean, it, you know, there's a lot of different companies out there now, especially in this market, that are there. You can find, it's actually a pretty competitive market right now, where you know, you can find some pretty cheap hard money.
And what is cheap in your mind?
Well, you know, I know here some of the some of the lenders in town are charging maybe 5 points up front, 4 points up front. I found other competitors that are at 2 points, 1.5.
So you're talking about just upfront expense.
Upfront expense, interest rates 10%,
sure.
11%.
Sure.
So just like you said earlier, it just depends on the deal. If it's something that you can get in and out quick, why not? You know, you're going to pay the upfront fee, but margin's big enough and you can get in 2-3 months. Yeah. It's a good deal, then why not?
So I'm going to transition to one other piece that we really haven't talked about, but I think is important, especially for an investor. It has to do with short-term gains that you're going to take from this sale. So let's just say that you bought a property, I'm just throwing a number out there, for $60,000. You sold it for $100,000. And let's just say, not throwing in costs, your net was $40,000. There lies a potential tax implication for that money. Have you counseled anybody to understand kind of how they should at least consider that part, or ask them to talk to their CPA about that?
Yeah, so for me, I my rule of thumb is 20% capital gains tax on that profit. So I have it in my spreadsheet, you know, at the bottom of the, you know, next to the bottom line.
So here's the spreadsheet. So you actually have some type of function that you start this process and actually put it in writing, so you see real numbers, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's something that I didn't know existed. Obviously, I knew it happened, but I thought you were out there with your, you know, paper and pen just calculating stuff out, which I'm sure old school investors actually do that too. But
right.
You're looking at numbers, kind of like what your net expenses are, net cost overall, and then what your profit margin might be if you sold it at the price you want to market.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're out there in the field, I don't carry my spreadsheet or my laptop or my phone. I mean, I have my phone, but I'm not looking, you know, at my spreadsheet when the seller's in front of me. I do that at the top of my head, or I have my pencil and notepad. But you know, once you get into the business and you know what it really takes, you have to be organized.
Yeah.
You have to be organized, especially when you're dealing with multiple projects. You know, I don't have a big, you know, bandwidth. So, hey, by the end of the day, I'm done. I don't want to think anymore, right?
Sure.
I'm burnt out. And so, yes, you got to be organized. You got to have a spreadsheet. You got to have a system to track all your expenses, to track the budget, to track what's coming in, what's coming out.
Yeah. So let's go with kind of the ending portion of this podcast. I want to ask you this question. How important is it for you to have a good team of people you work with that help you with this project? Meaning you're doing the project management, but how important is it to find the right team of people to work with? So for example, during this podcast, we had to pause previously for a short moment so you could talk with the person who's buying materials, right? At a big box store, but designing. Part of your plan is knowing, hey, this is my budget. How important is that? And what are some of the basic people that you need to solicit their help with in order to get to the next step?
Well, that's a great question, actually, Ellen, because you got to have the right people around you, just like any business. You got to have the right people executing as a team. You know, right now, as of 2 days ago, I was a one-man show. I was actually the one managing the projects.
Sure.
And I suck at that, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, hey, that transparency is important here, Alex. I appreciate your honesty.
You know, I've always played as, you know, on the retail end. I've always focused on acquisitions, buying the property, finding the properties. But I never really started managing property up until the beginning of this year. Well, before in the past, I did do like one or two at a time. But now that I'm starting to build volume, you know, I can't handle more than two properties by myself. Those projects can get real hairy sometimes.
Sure.
And so So even some of the stuff that I was dealing with was out of my scope of business. So I had to, you know, I had to reach out for help. You know, I had to get some of the handymen knew what they were doing, and I was just really going off of them. But as a matter of fact, just a couple of days ago, my buddy, I took him to walk one of my properties because I was done with it. I was actually going to wholesale it to him because I was finding more property that were easier to fix. And that property I bought back in February has been sitting there. You know, I just demoed it 2 weeks ago, and I really seen how much work it required, and I was like, I'm out of here. I'm gonna sell it. He came check it out 2 days ago. He came over and checked it out, and he offered to help me with the project. And now he's actually managing another project. So he's managing two of my projects at this point. That's a huge weight off my shoulders. Sure. I'll tell you that.
So you mentioned handyman. Are there any particular trades that you should have on call, opportunity to work with if needed, like plumbers, electricians?
Yes.
You know, do you have like go-to people, and did it take a while to find the right people in the right places to do that?
You do, and you're probably always going to need someone, someone that you're going to add to your database. You're always going to need someone. So yes, you got to have that network. You definitely got to have that network of handyman. That part I was struggling with a little bit. I was, you know, you got to understand, also run part of a brokerage. I'm part owner and also deal with the retail part of the business, and then I'm handling all investments at the same time. So for me, me getting involved in the project management really wasn't worth my time.
Sure.
I got in it just because I wanted to try it. I didn't want to pass on a lot of these opportunities. And so I wanted to kind of get a taste of what it was like to be a project manager. And I'd rather not do it. Like, I'd rather focus on finding more deals. I'd rather focus on negotiations and then selling the property.
Okay. Yeah. So through a lot of sales training and coaching and stuff, one of the things that they talk about is spend most time doing the things that you're gifted at that give you the largest rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me like your eye for the right property and the ability to reasonably calculate expenses on the front end is where your forte is and where you really shine. Because then once you get the property acquired, you're then passing off to other people to allow them an opportunity to do what they do very well: project management, finding the right bids, getting the quality materials that you need for the project, and then you're managing. You're just saying, okay, checking in, see how things are going. Are you in budget? You know, those types of things. Am I wrong?
No, you're right on. Yes. So now since the gentleman took over the projects, all I'm doing is accepting the. He's giving me all the bids, and I'm just accepting, declining them. But now I don't have to worry about chasing a handyman or contractor around or calling, making these phone calls.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when I was getting ready to go home, I still had to take one more stop, have a conversation with the crew that was at the house.
Sure.
And then they tell me about what they found. They broke the wall down, and you know, now the plumbing has to be fixed and so on and so forth. So that just became too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather not get involved on those that side of the operations.
Now, do you notice that there's any particular time, or everyone wants to time the market? Mm-hmm. You've heard this all the time. You know, as a real estate salesperson as well, and as a real estate advisor, you do traditional real estate sales and listings.
Right, right.
But your forte has been the investment side, but that's not exclusively what you do, right? So when you talk to somebody and they come in and they want to buy a house, but they want to buy it for investment purposes, everyone's looking for the right time. So what is your opinion about the right time, and how do you define that? Do you have a definition in your mind?
Well, the right time was a month ago.
Okay.
You know, you want to put it like that. You know, you just have to take action.
Sure.
You know, there is no right time, to be honest with you. Just prepare yourself so that when the opportunity comes, you know when to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You know, I've dealt with that with some of the investors I work with now. You know, some of the friends that want to get into the business, they want to fund the project, they want to get, you know, they want to flip, but they're waiting. You know, they're waiting for this, for that. They're waiting. You know, whatever it is, I'm pulling triggers. You know, if I find a deal, I'm going to buy it. You know, if I don't have the money, I'm going to find a way to get the money.
Sure.
So at that point, the universe just comes together.
Yeah.
For you. And so all I got to say is take action.
Yeah.
Another part is where is the market? You know, some investors want to buy. They're waiting to buy until it crashes again. Some investors think it's going to bust. We're ready to bust now. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know where they're getting that information from, but you can buy and invest and build wealth in any market, in an up market or a down market. You just got to know how to buy and buy it right.
That's, I think, the key point. One of the keys to investing, specifically in homes that I have heard, is your profit and long-term gains as far as money comes from how you buy the property.
Right. We were buying property when the market crashed, while it was crashing. We were actually part of the cost in the formula was the depreciation. You know, we had our percentage in there.
Sure.
How much we thought it was going to go, you know,
go down,
and how long that project was going to take. So yeah, we had that in there at that point. So again, you can buy in a down market, up market, on the upswing. You just got to learn how to buy.
Yeah.
And obviously, yes, always have that sense of urgency. Always be aware of what could happen next.
Sure.
We always have that in the back of our mind. But we're buying pretty safe.
I think that the listeners of this podcast have taken away a lot of details. And I'm just going to summarize what I heard in this. Number one, when you are purchasing real estate, it all starts with a mindset. It's understanding what your tolerances are, understanding that if you go into it with emotional focus, you're not going to be the greatest investor. And maybe you need to go mature a little bit and come back when you're ready to listen to how to invest and buy property and flip them. The second thing is that you're not new to this. So the experiences that you have had give you that discerning eye when you find the property and you have, you know, people driving around town finding these distressed properties, that you have the ability to take action now. You're not allowing the environment around you to make those decisions for you specifically, because you've built in to your formula the market factors a little bit, right? So then, and the third thing is that if you want to become an investor, you have to just do it. You can't just sit there. And if you have idle dollars not earning anything and you want to invest, then you're either going to consider having all the money paying cash. You're going to be a wholesaler, which means you're going to take that property and remarket it and sell it for a profit. Or you're going to be an investor, meaning you're going to be a part of a venture capital where you're pooling money with another group of people and you're taking a smaller share of those profits. But at the end of the day, I take away this. Investing is still alive and well, and there's opportunity out there.
There's a lot of opportunity right now.
Absolutely. That there are professionals like you out there to help them, guide them through that process. And if they don't buy it, you likely will. If you take action, nothing's going to be different than where you started today.
Right.
So, Alex, in parting, give us your contact information. What is a good way to reach you if the listeners of the podcast have a question?
Well, pretty straightforward. I'm going to put my number out there.
Sure.
You can reach me at 661-204-8663. That's my cell phone. You can text me, call me, or my email. It's alex@moragrouprea.com.
Alex, thank you again for your time, brother.
All right.
I thank you. I think the listeners of this are really going to get some value. Have a great day, guys.